G'day, this is Jeff Floyd, pastor of C3 Church Bathurst, and this is our podcast. Thank you for joining us today. C3 Bathurst brings life to people by helping them to be revived, restored, and released through getting to know Jesus and his people. We hope that this message will bring you life today. Whole Bible contains the Old Testament and New Testament. And the New Testament is relatively new. It's only 2,000 years old. And it's the back bit, of course, of your Bible. But that bit is the place where Jesus comes. I'll just throw this on the screen, man. So in the Old Testament, we have all the stories leading up to Jesus. Jesus as a man comes here, right? But we start with the creation. And then we head with the whole story of the Old Testament through the fathers, the early church fathers that we call them the patriarchs, the Exodus from Egypt over. And then we've got the conquest of the land of Israel. We've got the here of the judges. We move into the kingdoms under the kings of Israel and Judah. And then we have the exile where they're sent out to Babylon and then they return. And then there's what we call the Great Silence. 400 years between Malachi, the end of the Old Testament, and Matthew, the start of the New Testament. It's not that God's people weren't active and around, but there was lots happening in their time, but we don't see that in our Bible. It's a 400-year gap between those pages. And then we get to the Gospels, Jesus, the birth of Jesus, the story of the early church, and us in the middle of that. But here's the point of all that, is that you and I live that way, but Jesus always has been, right? Not this. Jesus was in the beginning with the Word. But there are some times in the Old Testament that Jesus appears. Now, I know there are prophecies of Jesus. So Isaiah 53 is an incredibly accurate prophecy of what Jesus even looked like, even did. There are pages that you read, like Psalm 110, that speak of Jesus. Wow, that's incredible. So there's prophecies, pictures of Jesus. And there's also people who kind of play a role like Jesus. So for example, Moses plays a Jesus kind of role, as does David. And so these are kind of prefigures of Jesus, right? So we get hints of this secret throughout the Old Testament. But what's really fun, above the words about Jesus to come, the prophecies, above the people who might look a bit like Jesus and feel like him, Jesus himself jumps into the pages of the Old Testament. Did you know that? He appears, scholars kind of have different views on this, but four times most scholars would agree. All right. Christophanies is the word. Jesus himself, before he comes as a baby, Nazareth, angels, shepherds, all that, before he gets there, there are four times when he himself comes as a man in different key points of the scriptures. Isn't that amazing? It's so much fun. Let's unpack it. We're going to look at three today and one next week of where Jesus gives us mysterious hints of who he is and glimpses of what's to come as we unpack the secret. You ready for a bit of exploration through the Old Testament? Well, I'm ready. I'm ready. That's where we're going. Come with me to Genesis 32. We pick up the story of Jacob and Esau. Jacob and Esau are twins, warring twins, not happy twins. They haven't treated each other so well, actually. They've kind of outsmarted each other and they just eventually separated. This is crazy. And Esau went that way and Jacob went that way. But there came a point where Jacob was really, he just really wanted to reconnect with his family. He'd been off on a journey of his own, and he'd married a couple of times synchronously. He had lots of kids. He had huge amounts of, you know, stock, and he was quite a wealthy man. But he was desperate to be reconnected with Esau, his twin brother. And so he comes back. He gets his huge elaborate plan, and that's where we pick up the story in Genesis 32, verse 22. Now he arose that same night and took his two wives and his two maids and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and he sent across wherever he had. He had prepared gifts, you know, like peace offerings to his brother. He sent them all ahead, and then it says at the start of the next verse that he was left alone. Who knows that when all the dust is settled and everything's planned and you're all alone, that's the moment when so much God speaks. When you're in the middle of the noise and the bars and everything's going on, sometimes it's hard to hear the voice of God, isn't it? But this point in time, all the planning had taken place, everything was ready to go, and now he finds himself alone. And what happens next is this encounter that comes. A man wrestled with him until daybreak. Like, that's a wrestle, a whole night long wrestle, physical wrestle. You've seen little kids wrestle. You might have watched wrestling on the TV. You know. But this was an all-night wrestle. What was going on here? This man was wrestling with him until daybreak at this key moment when he's all about to be reconciled with his brother. And when he saw, when the man saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh, so the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. So the man wrestling with Jacob wasn't winning. All right, what do? I just must be a little point in there that would dislocate something. Then he said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But he, Jacob, said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." He said, the man, "You shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. You have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Who is this man? It's actually Jesus. This is Jesus, pre-Mary and Joseph Jesus. The Jesus who always was in the beginning has popped into earthly history to wrestle with Jacob. What's going on? What's he doing? How do we know that it's Jesus? Well, he was a man, described as a man. And then we keep going. He said, your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. The word Israel means God prevails. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. And then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me, what is your name?" And he said, "Why is it that you ask me my name?" He didn't answer. Sounds like the encounter with Moses, you know, "I am who I am." And he blessed him there. And so Jacob named the place Peniel, for he said, "I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved." And that word Peniel means facing God. So see, here we find Jacob on this journey, discovering that God is very, very real. Not just kind of a distant God, not just some rules and laws and things, but a God who comes and wrestles. Is that the usual picture we give of God? "Come and meet my Savior Jesus. He's the wrestler." How does that go down today? Does that even make sense to us? "Come and meet my wrestling friend." Is it consistent in the Bible that God is a wrestling God? I think it might be, because when we look at kids and dogs and things, everyone wrestles. You see, what's going on here is a picture. It's a glimpse of the Jesus who is to come. Wrestling God? Start to think of the scriptures, the New Testament scriptures that talk about Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. What kind of person was Jesus? And we picture him meek and mild as a little boy surrounded by animals in the feeding trough. It's not the wrestler. But then we start to picture who Jesus became, and the Jesus that would challenge authority, that would challenge anything that was set against who God really was. A man who would reconfigure things, who wasn't content to put up with things, that he's not a tame lion, quotes C.S. Lewis. He sees a higher destiny, and that in the transformation, God brings life. You think about his deal with the Jews, continually wrestling with them, trying to help them see who God really is. Think about his encounters with his disciples, his 12 man and all the others who would try to understand, who is this? Who is this man? And they continually get it wrong. And I reckon life might have felt like a wrestle with Jesus. It would have been amazing and incredible, but not an easy journey. So sometimes when we think of God, when we think of God's encounter with us, here's one clear picture. God is a God who challenges us and wrestles with us. And for us today, sometimes life is a wrestle, isn't it? Sometimes our walk with God is a wrestle. Have you ever had it out with God? Have you ever said to God, right, gloves are off, let's sort this out, God. This is what I reckon. Like, you never win. But sometimes it's nice to get it out off your chest. God's big enough, he can go with it. Have you ever really questioned things and go, why, God, how can this be so? What's going on? See, that's the wrestle. And what I love about this passage is that God's okay with wrestling. In fact, he started it. He's the one who got in there and wrestled Jacob. What's happening in that process is that he is changing and transforming Jacob. And he even changes his name from deceiver to the face of God. Changes his name. And he gives him a brand new identity and a brand new mission. And completely transforms his character. And Jacob becomes the father of nations. The 12 tribes of Israel come from him. So he is the father of the most significant nation on the planet. And the moment, the key moment, is a wrestle. You and I have to be okay with wrestling. It's kind of like we're about to watch, you know, do you watch the Sydney Hobart race? Boxing Day, it's coming up. Love Boxing Day because Christmas is over and you can just sit back and watch the yachts sail out Sydney Harbour. And you look at them from a distance, you think, man, that is so smooth. Like, imagine being on that yacht, just put your head back and enjoy it. You know, it just looks so serene. But you see the close-ups of those yachts. They're furiously rigging things and doing things and, you know, running around. He's active. That's what life is like sometimes. On the outside, it looks, there goes a yacht out the head. But on the inside, people are doing all kinds of wrestling. You and I have a wrestling God. And in that wrestling is great refining and great transformation. I'm so thankful that our God challenges us and shapes us and molds us. He doesn't just kind of let us go, yeah, you'll be right, off your own journey, follow your own path. You'll be, no, he continually interrupts us and deals with us. Isn't that good? Sometimes we don't like it or appreciate it. Sometimes his timing is terrible. But actually, he knows what he's doing. In the wrestle, real life and transformation is taking place. But don't despise the seasons of wrestle. Even if he's touched your hip and you'll never walk again properly, He will be with you. And in that process, he transforms you and changes you and gives you new life. So that's the first, we call it Christophany, the first revelation of Jesus himself as a person, the wrestler. The second one is called the captain. This one is really fun. It's the second appearance that I'm going to deal with this morning. And this, again, is a critical moment in history, in the timeline of the church, the Old Testament. And this is where God's people have spent 40 years in the wilderness. They've escaped Egypt with all the plagues and the Pharaoh's deals, and he finally lets them go, and they spend 40 years wandering in the desert, honing them. God gives them instructions of how to live. They built this mobile temple, they call the Ark, and the tabernacle. And they emerge out ready to take the land that God has promised them. that the land of Canaan, God says, I'll give you this land. You have to work for it and fight for it, but I'll give it to you. Now that makes sense together. And then Joshua assumes the leadership. Moses is dead, and all eyes are now on Joshua. They've crossed the river, and they're looking at their first city that they have to take down, a city called Jericho. And I can imagine that Joshua is feeling a little bit apprehensive, because in Joshua 1, God keeps telling him, hey, be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. You don't need to tell somebody who's strong and courageous to be strong and courageous. He's been told, Joshua, now is a moment to be strong and courageous. And so I can picture Joshua looking up and going, my goodness, this city, the walls, kilometers thick, and incredible army in here, and it's a significant town. God, how are we going to do this? And he looks up, and it says, now, verse chapter 5 of 13 of Joshua, now it came about when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked. He didn't see Jericho, but he saw a man standing opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. Joshua went to him and said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? Like, are you with us or against us? Like, who are you? What's going on? Who are you? Settle down, big man, you know? He said, no. Rather, I indeed now come as captain of the host of the Lord. We talked 2 weeks ago about the glory of heaven and the angels celebrating. I mentioned them last week, this celebration. Here is the boss of all of heaven's armies. Wouldn't you like that on your team? You're about to take this land. You're about to fight against. And suddenly, here comes the captain of the entire army of heaven. Joshua fell on his face to the earth. I think I'll do the same. He bowed down and said to him, what has my Lord to say to his servant? Captain, boss, what instructions do you have? The captain of the Lord's host said to Joshua, remove your sandals from your feet, for the place where you're standing is holy. And Joshua did so. It's Jesus. Jesus is the captain of the host. He's God. He accepts the worship of a man. Only God will. No angel will accept earthly worship. They'll say, no, don't worship me. Worship God. It's Jesus. He's appeared here. And the response of Joshua is worship. It's take off your feet, remove your sandals, because right here is an encounter moment. The right response is to enter into that zone of worship, just as Moses did with the burning bush. Take off your sandals. What is that all about? Why did Jesus kind of just pop into history right there? That moment, he could have been any time, but right here he goes, now is a key moment. Now is a moment where I want to give a little glimpse of what is to come. You see, all these glimpses are just little pictures of the true picture that is to come when Jesus came as a man. Here's just a little snapshot, and this time he says, I'm coming as a boss. I'm captain. I'm in charge. Before I was wrestling and a transformer, but now I'm coming as a leader. And our Jesus is a boss. He is a captain, unapologetically, authoritatively. He leads us. And I am so thankful that he is the captain of our church, of the church worldwide, every church. He's the boss of my life. He is the ruler of this world. And here's just a little glimpse of Jesus, the captain. Hebrews 2:10 talks about Jesus being a perfect leader. So here's the picture for us. Have you encountered Jesus as a captain? Have you given way to him? Have you come to that point where you go, oh, I'm going to take off my sandals, take off my life, and follow? That's what Jesus demands. He is everything else, but he's also a captain and a ruler. And in these moments of encounter with Jesus, you can't help but have that sense. Oh, I need to submit here. I need to submit my life and my plans and my dreams. And at that point, you enter into true transformation. It's not a scary rule, but it is a rule. We have a captain. You know the idea of a captain of our soul, that poem? Well, it's actually Jesus. It's not us. He will lead you into victory. He gave Joshua the plan. It was a crazy plan. It was march around this city 7 times and then blow your trumpets. What sort of military strategy is that? But when they did that, blew the trumpets, all the walls fell down. Jericho was conquered, the first city, the greatest city. It gave them such a boost. Why? Because Joshua listened with instructions from them. What about you and I? What kind of instructions does God give you to march into victory? What kind of strategy do you need right now for your world? What kind of situations are you facing? End of year stuff. Everyone's going crazy. Got to get this done. Finish off. Family things. Christmas dinner with Aunt Beryl. How are you going to cope? You need a strategy. All the things that, don't you need a strategy? Don't you need a military ruler to help you inside into everything you're facing next year? What are you going to do next year? How's it going to unfold? Grab the captain. Take off his sandals. Worship. All right. We've got the wrestler. We've got the captain. This one's my favorite. Fast forward in our timeline from Jacob to Joshua. Right now, I talked about the exile previously, 70 years that God's people were taken from Jerusalem and the towns around it and across the desert to Babylon, modern-day Iraq. They were there because they disobeyed God so many times that God said, I can't handle it anymore. I need to show you that I am the boss. And lovingly, he takes them out. In the process, there's an amazing thing that happens. God's refining his people. And the book of Daniel is written for this time. It's written in the context. Daniel has friends, and they all are loyal to God. And they end up in the courts of King Nebuchadnezzar. They're smart people. They're valued people. They're honored people. But they're still Jews. And so in Daniel 3:12, we pick up the story. One of the king's advisors comes and reports this terrible thing that's just happened, King Nebuchadnezzar. And he says, there are certain Jews whom you've appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon. Mainly, here's these three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These three, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up. They don't worship the gods of Babylon. These men, O king, have disregarded you. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. See, Nebuchadnezzar was kind of, he liked himself. So much so that he built this massive gold statue that whenever anyone walked past it, they had to bow down. Whenever they played some musical instruments, they had to bow down. And so he kind of liked receiving this worship, and he was furious that three people from another country would not bow down to his image. Right? They're in a rage. He brings his three, and in verse 14, Nebuchadnezzar responded to them and says, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, let's do a little test. Stand there. If you are ready, you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon. That's a three-stringed instrument. Just making that up. The psaltery, the bagpipe, I know, and all kinds of music to fall down, basically anything. Worship the image that I have made. Very well, that's all right. But if you do not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. And what God is there that can deliver you out of my hands? Ready? Let's do this little test and let's see how your God goes. Well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't get to do the test because they kind of put something out there. They said, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king." Can you imagine saying that? This powerful ruler? Your gods are nothing. Our God, he can deliver us. But I love the next line. He says, "But even if he does not," verse 18, "let it be known, even if we do die, King O, if he does not, let it be known to you that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Why? Because they are faithful to God as their captain. They know the scriptures to worship the Lord God only, not bow down to all kinds of pagan idols. They refuse. And they have so much faith in God that they will go to the fire rather than bow down. So Nebuchadnezzar, verse 9, was filled with wrath and his facial expression was altered towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, probably from curiosity to outrage. He answered by giving orders to heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain valiant warriors who were his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in order to cast them into the furnace of blazing fire. Seven times hotter. Let's have a picture of this. Now, for this reason, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace had been made extremely hot, the flame of the fire slew those men who carried them up. So hot that the people who put them in actually died, burnt. But these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, there's Shadrach, there's Meshach, Abednego. Hang on, is that the right picture, Matt? Nebuchadnezzar the king was astounded and stood up in the haste and said, "Was it not three men that we cast into the midst of the fire? Look, I see four men loosed, walking about in the midst of the fire without harm. And the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." Look at that. Who's that? It's Jesus. In the middle of this crisis, in the middle of this test, when these men have said, "No, we will not bow down to what everyone else is doing. We will stand tall and straight. We will follow our God. We're not going to go the way of the world." Who's there in the middle of them, championing them on, saving them, with them all the way? And the whole crowd is, how can it be? This thing's seven times hotter than it usually is. Nebuchadnezzar came near the door of the furnace, the blazing fire. He responded and said, "Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, come out, you servants of the Most High God, and come here." And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the midst of the fire. The satraps, the prefects, the governors, the king's high officials gathered around and saw in regard to these men that the fire had no effect on their bodies. These men, nor was the hair of their head singed, nor were their trousers damaged, nor had the smell of fire. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who put their trust in him, violating the king's command, and yielded up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own God." I love it. Jesus appears in the middle of this. His appearance is as of a man. Why we think it's a Christophany or a revelation of Jesus before his time. And it's a God who comes and delivers his people when they step out in faith. It's the faithful the wrestler, the captain, the faithful God who comes and delivers and sets his people free, especially when they trust him, especially when they believe in him, especially when they push back against the kings and the rulers who say, your God can't help you. Oh, well, watch this. That was so true of Jesus in his fullness when he came to earth. He would be with the people who believed in him. He'd answer their prayers. Like in Matthew 9, two blind men followed him. And Jesus says, do you believe that I can make you see? And they said, yes, Lord. They told him, we do. We do believe that you can help us, Jesus. He touched their eyes and said, because of your faith. How many times in Scripture does Jesus say, because of your faith, be healed? Because of your faith, it will be done. It's the same thing. That Jesus in fullness comes and is looking for faith. And this is why this is such an important story, because he's looking for faith. He's looking for moments in time when he can step into the breach and save and rescue and prove that God is actually the real God. But he did when he came in fullness. And it's what he does to us now. Same Jesus, see? He's been around for a long time. He's doing the same things before he even came to earth. How much more will he now, in his fullness that we know him, step into that breach when we're stepping out in faith on something? Maybe it's giving and tithing. Sometimes that's hard. Sometimes that's a step of faith. Will I survive the week or the month? But I'm going to do it anyway. Maybe it's in your relationships. I'm going to forgive that person. Step of faith. I don't want to, but I'm going to do that. Maybe it's in arranging things, and maybe it's in standing against what other people are doing. So, you know what? I'm not going to go that way. You do it, but I'm going this way. Christian life is unconventional. But maybe as you do that, Jesus steps in and empowers. I love this story. I love them because as you read them along, it's just Jesus appears. It's a glimpse of Jesus. The secret is coming out. And I just want to ask you the question this morning. Have you seen these glimpses in your own world? Have you seen those moments where Jesus appears and jumps out? Those key moments. I reckon everyone on the planet has had these moments. Little thoughts, little moments. Wow, what's that? Jesus. But what Jesus is wanting to do, he talks about in Galatians 4:4. He says, when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who are under the law, so that we might receive adoption of sons. We get glimpses of Jesus, but the adoption into his family comes in the fullness of time.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. We'd love to get to know you better. Come and visit us at one of our Sunday services in Bathurst, rear of 217 Howard Street. Have a week filled with life.